for how to do.
Great,
thank you.
Thank you.
Anyone else? We can also leave a little bit of time at the end, too, if you have any reactions to what we talked about. I'll just get into it, I guess. So we wanted to talk to Aaliyah about the agenda today, she wasn't able to make it. I think she's on travel this week, but she wanted to hear some direct responses about what we talked about at our last meeting, and then also asked me to put some time at the end of the agenda to talk about innovative ideas from other cities. I think a commissioner had emailed her about some specific ideas, so I wanted to leave some time where if you all have been reading things or wanted to share some ideas that we should be thinking about, we can talk about that a little bit, and then we'll get into what's next. Oh, sure. Can do introductions. Just in case everyone doesn't know.
Oh, I'm Debbie Critchley. I'm formerly of the ACPD Alexandria Commission on People with Disabilities, but I was asked if I would like to stay on the committee, which I am. I can't say I'm representing West End Business Association because I will be reporting back to them.
Okay, great.
My name is Wendy Phelps. I work with Tool Design Group, and we're one of the consultants on the team.
I'm Jeff Poole. I'm current chair of the ACPD, where Debbie came from.
Congratulations.
Thanks.
I'm Casey Kane. I'm on the Transportation Commission as the Traffic and Parking Board's representative.
I'm Jake Jakubek. I'm the Transportation Commission representative.
John Gable, also Transportation Commission, representing the Planning Commission.
I'm Maria Shiroki. I'm with the Alexandria Chamber of Commerce.
Chris Eben with TESC.
Erin Murphy, I'm from Kimley Horn. I'm the consultant team project manager supporting the city.
Thank you. So at our last October meeting, I think October 22nd or so, we talked a lot about outreach and how to make sure we're increasing or hearing from all voices in the community. And we talked to you a little bit about our approach and got some feedback from you. Both on who to reach out to and in different approaches of how we can really make sure that we're reaching all different groups in the community. In response to that, I think someone mentioned talking to the Census Committee and seeing what they were doing to for outreach. And they kind of had a similar approach that we did and had a lot of trouble, it sounds like, initially. But I cross-referenced our list, and I think we were reaching out to a lot of the same groups. But we had a lot of success in the last month, actually. Are we getting into that? Yeah. Meeting with different community groups, a whole range. So I'll name some of those as we go forward. You also talked about ways that we could improve the priority activity, and we took in those recommendations and made changes. Actually, I have samples here if you guys want to take a look, but I'll have it on the slides as well. I'll pick it up in a little bit. We talked about policy towards the end, and I know we dumped a lot of information at you, but we talked about the role that the AMP should be playing in the city and how it connects with all the other plans. And what we heard from all of you was that it should really be like the North Star, the central repository for all mobility-related policy, which means sort of taking it in from other places that exist. And correct me if I'm misinterpreting or misspeaking a little bit of exactly what we talked about. But use this as a central repository and make sure that it's being used to help advance use it more as a tool to advance the policies that have already been set out. So it's just not another plan on the shelf, but it can really be accelerating other things that we've been talking about. The alignment of future decisions and actions with the outcomes. And we talked about the major themes of safety, mode shift, demand management, and innovation. Do you have anything you want to add to that?
Just to say that we have begun work on drafting policy. Tonight we're going to talk to you about performance indicators, but we're going to come back next time and talk about policy. And really, I think what we heard from you last time was very informative in shaping the direction in which we started that policy drafting. And we're going to refine it a little bit more with Citi before we unveil that for you, so you have a cleaner set of policies to react to. But just a thank you for the discussion from last time, because it was worthwhile in our efforts to then go and really, you know, hone down our list of potential policies and organize those and draft those. So we're excited to bring those back to you next time we meet.
So we had our meeting with community champions this month, or last month. I think so far I've met with 7 or 8 different community champions, and I have a few more meetings lined up on Friday. We've been talking about community champions, but I also talk about stakeholders separately. So it's the champions are a lot of the harder to reach populations representing different like community organizations. And then I've also had a lot of meetings with stakeholder groups like the Eisenhower Partnership that I'll talk about in the next slide. But from the community champions meetings, we just heard, we were talking to them a little bit about their own priorities, but also about how we can get information out to their stakeholders, or at least try to understand their priorities and how they can help champion us, champion either being a representative of their community or disseminating information. And we were hoping a little bit that they would be able to go out and present and share this activity with their groups, but I think a preferred alternative is inviting me back to meetings that they already host, or hang out in the lobby of housing units or things like that. So that'll be some follow-on work where we get more into the weeds of different ideas with their populations. And then also met with between the Eisenhower Partnership end of October, and I tried to sort of give a couple blurbs of some of the takeaways, but we have notes from all of these meetings, and with a lot of these groups, you can't really generalize one major takeaway. But one thing I heard from that group was there's discussion of better transit, but also I think also in November, scooters was a very hot topic, and they were talking about how they wanted more equity with those new mobility options, because they wanted the scooters in front of their businesses, and they weren't seeing them. The West End Business Association, I talked with their board, Debbie was there, and that was mostly on how to continue engagement with that group and less on their priorities. But I think what I learned from that group is there's a diverse array of business interests and a diverse array of priorities from what I could tell from that group. And then same with the Commission on Persons with Disabilities. We use this activity with them to learn about their priorities and have them break out into different groups. And every group was very different in how they allocated their priorities. And then the Federation of Civic Associations, we have a lot of representatives here, but we had a really robust discussion about what we need to be paying attention to in the plan. Congestion, quality of your life is really what it should all boil down to, and congestion is a major issue and cut through traffic. There was a request to be on the board, so there is a lot of good discussion there, and also how I think they're a major constituent for a major, they represent a lot of different communities, and so we should be going back to them more for input. So we also completed 4 of our pop-up events. And those were a lot of fun. I was at the Old Town Farmers Market in the cold morning. But we got a lot of good participation at those events. And I think really got just a lot of people who might not come to meetings, but were out and about in the community and had ideas on mobility. Got into a lot of good conversations with folks about... Yeah, some people really wanted to explain what their priorities are, what they really, really cared about. Other people did the activity, and then I asked them to elaborate or explain why they did it the way they did. They just said, this is what's important to me, and that that should explain it. So I have some summary of the feedback we've received so far, but we have a lot of work to do to drill down into the responses. And then we have these coming up in the next few days, and that'll wrap up this round of outreach for our pop-ups. So this is our new priorities activity. We showed you at the last meeting a draft version of this, but this is what we've been doing at our pop-up events and with stakeholders or some stakeholders, and then also have in an online format. We took a lot of your input from last time to make sure we were really highlighting congestion in there. I think there was some feedback on the parking and how to translate that. And then collecting email address and zip code only. I think there was a few other changes that we made in response to your comments as well. Have any of you taken the online survey? I just sent an e-news. I'll encourage you to share that with any of your member groups. We're hoping to wrap that up around the 10th to get activities there. So that you online, you go through and fill out that pyramid, and then there's an opportunity for you to provide written comments as well.
I posted it on the Zebra newspaper page and Facebook.
Wonderful, thank you.
Thanks. Yeah, I shared it with our membership.
Yeah, and I shared this with different stakeholder groups as well, and hoping that they spread it around. So we've counted. Oh, I have to give you the rest of them. 150 completed about from the last four pop-ups or three pop-ups. The YMCA was just yesterday. The Arlandria Community Conversations event. There was a good Spanish speaking contingent there that really benefited from our translators. As I mentioned, that we could use spreading the word on that online survey. But so far, from the pop-ups that we've done, we've heard those top three priorities, and this is really just looking at a straight-up count of who put what at the first marker. So there's, I think, a lot more to be done to understand sort of the trends with all of them, looking at the pyramids as a whole, and then also the feedback.
Getting into the comments, yeah.
Do we have a flyer in Spanish? That could be posted at the Chirilagua Center?
Yes.
Okay.
Any questions on what we've been up to so far?
You have one question on the 148 completed. Are those including online, or is those just at the pop-ups?
I think they're just the pop-ups, right? No.
As of Monday, there was only one completed online. So most of those have been in person, which actually is a good thing because it's helpful to kind of be tactile and interact with people when they're doing them. But to the extent that we can get some broader participation by spreading the word a little bit more and some responsiveness to e-news, we're hoping that can
come. Well, I'm actually excited.
When did it go out?
So there was in one from November. I forget that date, but it went out on Tuesday at 9:30, I think.
Okay. And Tuesday was probably a bad day for that to go out because Tuesday was Giving Tuesday.
Oh.
And there's a lot of email traffic and, social media traffic trying to get people to do things. And
No, that's true.
So that one might have fallen flat.
Yeah, well, we'll send out some more, and then it's also being advertised on social media.
But that's actually encouraging, though, that you got that many from the pop-up. So I think that certainly speaks.
Yeah, and that's a more
spontaneous
audience compared to the ones who are likely to respond to.
I think it's the West End Farmers Market. It was the last one of the season, and it was so cold. That was colder than the whole town one. I think everyone who was there pretty much participated.
Nice.
Oh, shoot. I didn't respond. I didn't turn on the audio.
No, I did.
Oh, you did? Okay. So I'm going to turn it over to Erin to talk to you about indicators, and I just wanted to set the stage a little bit. We were going through sort of how to sort of do some back-end work on initial conceptions of policies and how we're structuring the document, and we wanted to to get into indicators. There's a question of whether we do it up front or at the end. Are they in each chapter? Are they rolled up to the top? And we thought we wanted to start thinking about them at this earlier stage in the plan to really think about where we're trying to get to, and as we develop policies, making sure that we're trying to achieve the outcomes that we think are important for this plan and for the city. So we want to sort of do this preliminary understanding of where we are, but then I think it'll be important after we have more robust conversations with the community and as we develop more content and go through our priorities and everything, that we revisit these towards the end of the process to make sure that they still line up with the direction that the plan is taking. But we, at this point, are looking for your initial feedback on a couple different things that we'll get into.
So the plan outline that you're seeing on the screen is the same one that we showed last time, where we're starting at the vision level and moving stepwise down to guiding principles. These are the things that we took out of our conversations with you all and our surveys and our other community conversations, broad philosophies that, you know, reflect cities' beliefs and values and coordinate with, you know, other city plans and guiding documents. And then we'll move through the plan. So both of those, what we're thinking right now is that those are going to go in the plan's overview chapter. And then we'll move into policies and recommendations, and those are likely to be specific, some overarching policies, but some that are specific to different topic areas. And all of our recommendations will be supplemented with actions, the steps towards implementing that recommendation. But as we talked about key performance indicators and, you know, the soundbite we like to remind everybody for indicators is that we can't achieve what we don't measure. We don't know that we got there unless we are measuring and we have a target for which we are trying to achieve something. So we think these are really important sort of, you know, brackets to, you know, where we start with vision and guiding principles and what we measure with the indicators. So that's kind of the way that we approach developing the indicators. And as we flip to the next slide, what we came up with for a preliminary framework for our indicators is that they're really reflective of these guiding principles. So just on the screen here is one more reminder. I know we've shown this to you a few times about the vision and guiding principles, the draft vision and draft guiding principles. Vision, safe, seamless, and connected mobility options, foster a thriving Alexandria for all, and our guiding principles, access Alexandria, accessible, connected, convenient, equitable, safe, and sustainable. So what we're going to propose to you right now is that with a few areas for discussion, obviously, that's why we're here to talk tonight, we think that there are some indicators that align relatively well with those guiding principles. So we want to talk to you about these indicators. We also want to talk to you about this framework. And, you know, as you see this and react to this framework, does this make sense to you organizationally? So think about that as we continue the conversation here. So I'll talk through these a little bit here, and then I've got a couple of examples of the first few that are a little bit more perhaps amorphous or a little bit harder to understand from just some words. But accessible was our guiding principle. We will work to make transportation network fully accessible for all users, our users of all ages and abilities. And we're proposing that we measure that with a mobility index that is the percent of residents and jobs that have high access to transportation choices. Connectivity, the transportation system will take you where you want to go seamlessly by leveraging technology and integrating transportation and land use. So we thought about the connectivity indicator quite a lot, and what we've landed to for our proposal to you tonight is really thinking about connectivity in terms of city neighborhoods and within these neighborhoods having safe connections to community destinations.
And so the access one becomes a little bit of a citywide indicator, whereas the connected indicator becomes more focused on, you know, on a little bit more localized and is able to really have some relevance to the different places where people are across the city. The next one is convenience. The convenient guiding principle, we will provide a transportation system with high quality mobility options that are reliable, frequent, proximate, and comfortable. And in the current residence survey that the city conducts every other year, I think, Jen, every other year, there's a question that literally asks residents, is it easy to get around? And so this doesn't take into account, you know, this works for everyone. You know, how does that react to your everyday life and how you get around? So we think this is actually a really nice way to kind of fit in how people understand the convenience of their transportation.
And this is the measure in the strategic plan right now.
All right, again, getting back to convenient, if we go back to the next slide, you've got the convenient where it's reliable, frequent, proximate, and comfortable. And here comes the accessible word. Accessible for those with disabilities is different than accessible to the general population, and it should be addressed there under convenient, because what's convenient to an able-bodied person is not necessarily convenient to a non-able-bodied person. And somehow we need to, again, capture that accessible word properly.
Okay. I just want to respond a little bit to that.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it relates to your reaction to this. I'm not quite sure. But the indicator you guys have proposed for accessible doesn't get at all ages and abilities. And I think that might be the problem, because if we don't have it doesn't look as though it does. If you go to that slide, the accessible indicator is percent of residents and jobs with high access to transportation. Not entirely sure how you envision you doing that, but when I've seen that done, it's more of a geographic capture, and it doesn't speak at all to the abilities of the people that it's capturing geographically. Mm-hmm. So you could be close to a bus stop, but if you can't get to the bus stop, or the bus isn't accessible, so on and so forth. So I think you might be able to achieve more of what she's saying if we have a better indicator for accessibility that really captures all mm-hmm. ages and abilities.
Let's try and... I know you all really are good for discussion. Let's try and quickly get through the list, and then we can come back and discuss quite a bit, because I think certainly... we want to discuss this. There's room for improvement. We want to figure out what the best indicators are, but I want to make sure that you at least see the full picture, and then we'll come back to discussion, if that's okay. Safe. We will eliminate all traffic deaths and serious injuries by 2028. This is an exact reflection of the Vision Zero policy. And so for safety, we want to be mirroring the indicators that are measured as part of Vision Zero. And the highest level measure for Vision Zero is the number of crashes, fatalities, and serious injuries. I probably should say here that there are quite a number of other things that are and could be measured. We were kind of looking for something for each of these principles that was relatively comprehensive, and then, you know, certainly is something that is measurable and measurable on a relatively frequent basis, using to the extent that we have city data sources. So, I think we sometimes want to measure everything, and we were trying to move in a direction of measuring things that we thought really best represented the principles, but again, room for discussion here. But I just want to give you a little bit of insight about where we were when we came up with this discrete list of six items.
So with number three there, the convenient, we're going to use the resident survey, which is a biannual.
I think actually the...
Yeah, I think it used to be annual, and now it's biannual.
So is there not... When's the next one due out?
I thought must be next year, because I don't think I did one this year. So,
okay.
So we'll say next year. Is there time to sort of try to capture some of this stuff within that survey, such as the, you know, the age and the convenience or accessibility and stuff? In other words, broaden the survey a little bit to get at some of this stuff.
Yeah, potentially. I mean, we can look into it. Yeah.
I don't know if we have time, though, because it usually takes quite a while to kind of vet questions and make sure that you're actually getting what you're striving to get.
We like to limit the number of questions, too. Right. So, yeah, why don't we check with OPA?
But
and what possibilities are to cross-tabulate the data set in there? Like, what demographic questions are being asked, and therefore, what could you...
Correct.
What could you understand from that data set?
The problem, though, is that it's every other year, which means that if it's done next year, then it's 2 years hence, correct? So it'd be 2022 before you actually get...
Well, the survey's been asking this question.
Oh, it has. Okay.
So we have a baseline.
Got it. Mm-hmm. And if we don't screw it up by adding other questions, the baseline is good, right?
You know, sometimes when we do these plans with indicators... we don't have a baseline, and so the first step coming out of the plan is to develop the baseline. It's certainly not unheard of, and it's acceptable within the federal practices of transportation planning. But you know, if we have a baseline, better to understand what that is, and so you can sort of set some targets from the get-go. But, okay, so continuing on, sustainable. Looking here for non-SOV mode share. In the short term, you know, data sets are available on some of our individual modes, and in some cases, some limited data is available for commute trips via census journey to work data. In the long term, it would be great to have a mechanism to, you know, calculate mode share for all trips all day, every day. But that's not a data set that we have at our disposal at this moment. So I was going to just get into your question before going to show you some examples of a couple of these things. The mobility index, percent of residents in jobs with high access to transportation. As you alluded to, we've done this analysis before, and it is a spatial analysis. Are you proximate to a particular choice? And then if you add those choices up at a discrete geospatial location, how many choices are available to you there? So this is an example from the new BC plan, where the one on the left was the baseline and the one on the right was with the 2040 projects in place. As we, I think I skipped one. Did I get confused and skipped Equitable in this list? I'm sorry about that. So Equitable, the guiding principle is Alexandria acknowledges that different populations have different starting points in their level of mobility. Alexandria will be targeted, inclusive, and intentional in addressing gaps in transportation service and infrastructure for underserved persons and neighborhoods. So as we look to sort of narrowing, using that mobility indexing tool, but narrowing that down, looking at percentages of low-income minority and senior residents, and we can talk about a data set as it relates to persons with disability, and understanding their access to transportation choices. Again, on the left there, you're seeing an example from the Move DC plan, and on the right, you're seeing how that breakdown was used in the Alexandria Transit Vision Plan that's out as a draft plan right now for comment and working through the public process. So two examples of how that has been used. And then the third one that I wanted to highlight was related to that connectivity analysis that we're proposing could focus more on, you know, a neighborhood geography. And the example that I'm showing here is from Hoboken. This was more of an analysis that was done during the planning process to understand where particular modal focuses in that network should be, but really Hoboken is very small, but really breaking that city into three discrete geographies and understanding that within the planning process there was a desire for everybody to have, in this case on the right we're looking at Bicycle Network, but a desire for people to have connections to protected bicycle facilities, and in each case an east-west and a north-south bicycle corridor within each of those areas of the city. But this can apply sort of in a broader mobility context. So within particular neighborhoods, bicycles, sidewalks, we could look at the condition of our local streets as it relates to traffic calming or other measures. So I think we could apply this similar methodology, but at sort of a broader mobility focus. So that hits there. And then we also, I think we should have a discussion and maybe come back to this, but wanted to let you know that we're thinking about how these indicators could, you know, that there's a plan level indicator, but there could be a breakdown as it relates to the different plan chapters. So we're showing the chapters here that we're working on right now in phase one. This is sort of at a little bit earlier phase than the overall indicators that we just talked through and we're going to discuss here in a little bit, but really that there's a potential to think about this as it relates to different components of the plan and at the overall mobility plan level. So with that, I think I will... Jake, did you have a question on this one?
Yeah, I was looking at the safe one there, and it has crash statistics and then pedestrian bicycle crashes. Do vehicles fit in this somehow? The cars?
Yeah, we probably should have put that in the streets one. We kind of put some examples in here, and we did not fully flesh this out because we wanted.
That's what we're here
just
for.
Wanted to show you that this is maybe a next step once we have our conversation tonight, but we're not. We haven't. It's not fully baked. So I am going to go back to this slide, and I think at this point we will open it up for discussion. We have a couple of key questions for you, but we'll take anything that you want to talk about. Do you understand the organizational logic of aligning the indicators with the guiding principles? Are there indicators that you're expecting to see that we haven't fit into that initial list? And are there any that really just don't feel relatable to you or don't feel meaningful to you as it relates to those guiding principles? So if, you know, as we go around the table, have some discussion, if you could think about those questions, that would be helpful to us in moving forward into the next iteration of these indicators. And then as Jen indicated earlier, we expect to kind of have this conversation now, get to a stopping point, but we don't think we'll be done. We think when we get further along in the planning process, we have draft recommendations. We'll come back to these indicators and make sure that they're still relevant to the conversation we're having at that point.
And then one thing that we were struggling with internally is we kept having more ideas of different indicators that could be good to measure, but we also wanted to have a finite list and like a clear, sort of some clear North Stars of where we want to be going to. So dealing with those trade-offs, and I think having the chapter level measures was our way of having some big overarching ones, and then you can have ones that either add up to the big one or might capture like slightly different aspects that relate more specifically to chapters.
I have a couple quick observations. One is that we don't seem to be capturing somehow the environmental impact of the mobility plan. So I think we need something there, and maybe it's something we can pull out of the environmental action plan of some of the data that they were proposing to track or something.
One of the big ones in the EAP was reduction in greenhouse gas emissions.
Right.
And knowing that, you know, how we travel is a big component in that. Also, there should be a conversation about electric vehicles in that conversation. But we did sort of go towards mode share here because we thought that was pretty tangible as it related to the EAP for greenhouse gas emissions. And then we also put in this in the streets, but
yeah,
talking about
that.
Where that might
yeah.
belong is something related to electric vehicle fleet and EV charging facilities in the city. So those are the two that we thought about that related to sustainability, but you know, curious, good to hear your thought that that didn't quite jive, or...
I had a very similar thought, but I also was wondering, we had had those earlier discussions on how we wanted this plan to fit in with all those other parallel and other plans, and so I think a part of that too is wondering how we want to connect those indicators. Do we want the same ones? I like the additional ones you have in there, because I think those are also indicators, but I did feel like there was that missing, that piece that kind of maybe connected it with the other, or maybe you're putting it in two spots, and maybe it's the same exact one. I'm not sure if that's the right way to go, but I also noticed it missing that environmental piece.
And then in terms of the non-SOV mode shares, the short term, I think the assumption is that City Council is going to approve the next phase of the pilot on the scooters and the electric bikes. So we probably should go ahead and glom onto that data that would be
that
available there to
be available.
Have that included. And the city does have, I think it's 10 or 11 bike and ped counters. And I know there's some issues with those, and there's some, you know, question whether what the utility of that data might be. But that's at least something else to give some thought to at least take a look at that data and see if it brings any value to the table.
That kind of addresses a thought I had, that we're not addressing volume. There are a lot more cars on Route 1 on King Street than there are on side streets. And, you know, what comes to mind is Seminary Road, where they've now cut down the number of lanes and added bike lanes, and then you hear the same discussions of King Street, where nobody ever sees anybody riding a bike in the King Street bike lanes, and have we sacrificed on Seminary ease of commuting by eliminating a traffic lane and adding a bike lane, and what's the usage, what's the volume, and are we accounting for that? I'm not seeing that accountability in these necessarily.
I'd love to hear your all perspective on that a little bit more. I think from one perspective, obviously congestion is a huge issue.
Mm-hmm.
The region is growing, and Alexandria is situated in a geography in the region that, as it relates to vehicle travel as a whole, how much can the city move the needle on what happens from a regional perspective, and therefore should the plan, you know, what should the plan be measuring there? And I don't know that there is a right or a wrong answer. I think there is an answer that comes from conversation with you all about whether or not you think that that should be a plan indicator.
And I think we were debating about having that, or talking about having that as one of the high-level convenience, or looking at that as a high-level indicator. The easy to get around, or ease of getting around, seem to really capture that, and we have some impact over that. When we were looking at the chapter related, I was thinking that smart mobility is where we can work on, and we have Blinksy data. We haven't fleshed this out enough yet, but it's hard to figure out where to fit it, and again, trying to keep to the one indicator at the high level, but that's definitely a topic we wanted to raise with all of you, is how we should be thinking about that and part of the plan.
Any reactions from anybody else on that?
Well, I think one of the problems when you're counting volume sometimes is that you're then judging, you know, making decisions based on volume as opposed to other, you know, aspects. So, you know, we've talked about sustainability, or, you know, is the road, or is the space safer for people to use, whether it's being used by, you know, 10,000 or, you know, 5 or 6, you know, that's the starting point you want to work towards that day when it, you know, is just logical for people to choose whatever option they want without having to go through a lot of gyration. So I'm not sure volume is
necessarily of value. I only had tossed out the bike and ped ones just if you were looking for something else to get there. Because I.
Are you talking, which area are we talking about now?
I wasn't necessarily looking for any particular place for that to land. It was more that it was data and right. whether it had a utility somewhere or not. Right.
Because I agree with you. I mean, if we're talking about our highest priorities, there's a lot of progress we could make as a community in accessibility and safety and convenience and equity and sustainability, but not solve the congestion problem, not solve the, like, it could be entirely autonomous and electric vehicles safely somehow in the future moving about and not running into people. And everyone who lives here primarily doesn't even use the vehicles, but the density has increased a lot, so there's still congestion on the roads, even though, you know, we have a 75% transit mode share or something, you know, fantastical like that. But that future is possible and us still not resolving congestion. Mm-hmm. So I just want to throw that out there. It might just be not the end point that is as important as the endpoints that we've really verbalized in most of these goals.
I have what may be a more basic question since mm-hmm. this is my first meeting.
Yes, sir.
Who are we intending to measure with this? Is it confined only to people who live or work in Alexandria, or is it everyone who incidentally happens to be here at any moment in time? The congestion being a transitory problem, you know, a lot of the contributing force behind that isn't residents or even people who work here. So is the hope to take a whole picture or to focus in on
as it relates to a potential measure of congestion or as it relates to those indicators?
Frankly, both.
I think the answer is really dependent on which indicator it is. Because if we're measuring crash statistics, those can be from anybody who mm-hmm. is physically within city boundaries. If we're measuring mode share, typically you measure that for... you know, typically that's reported for either the residents or the employees of a particular place. So, and, you know, convenient, we definitely skewed towards residents on that one. So it varies by indicator. I think if we were to have a measure as it relates to congestion, that would be measuring any, you know, motorized vehicles that are within the boundaries of Alexandria, similar to the crash statistics.
Can we talk a little bit about the what you're envisioning are options for the connectivity analysis?
Mm-hmm.
Because it's written pretty generally up there. I think it's kind of like you have a concept but not necessarily a strategy yet. Do you have some specific approaches that you're looking at that would... It looks like it's not one number because there's so many different kinds of things that you could measure.
This is the one that we've probably spent the most time thinking about how exactly we could measure it, and I'm not ready to say that we are exactly there.
Right. Right.
I think, you know, at a conceptual level, it's a little bit of, you know, identifying what in each particular neighborhood, identifying the top community features. So is it a retail center? Is it, you know, one or more schools? Is it a community center? What are those places? And then really looking, so it could be a little bit of a spatial analysis, but really looking and seeing what connections there are in that neighborhood to those places. And when we talk about the safe connections, I think that's where we really need to look at the different, you know, options. Are there gaps in the sidewalk? What are the safe bicycle facilities available? How are our local streets functioning? I think that's an important component of the connectivity analysis. And then transit. So I think those are the big ones. I mean, we could take that further. Are there micro-mobility options available in that neighborhood that, you know, make those connections easier? So, you know, I think from a conceptual level, that's the direction that we want to have. From an analytical level, we probably need to get pens on a piece of paper and work it out and figure out how that might go down. We haven't done this exact analysis previously that I can just say it's this. We've got it down. I think we'd be developing something that's specific for you all,
and we'd have to figure out a way to measure it or like reproduce it too.
Right. Because it seems like at some level you can pick any one of those things. Let's say sidewalks, and you might say you could do an inventory, if we don't have it already, I don't actually know, of all of the block segments and whether or not they have sidewalks. And if the goal was 100%, we could map it once and map change over time, and that would just be sidewalks. And you wouldn't be capturing any of the other things that you talked about there, mm-hmm. but it could be important all on its own,
right.
But it also could be a piece of a more aggregate index kind of measure instead of just by itself, but then that makes it less transparent.
I think the way to make it transparent would probably be in alignment with those measures that Jen said build from mm-hmm. each chapter. How do those measures build into an overall index? And, you know, it could be sidewalks, but it also could be in terms of ADA, are all of our intersections have their appropriate curb ramps, and are all of our bus stops accessible? So, you know, what are the ADA projects that we need to complete within a particular neighborhood? So even within a particular, like even within the component of pedestrian, it could get complicated. So we need to work through that process.
Do you mind going back to the goal definition again for connectivity, so I can just recalibrate. Technology and integrating transportation.
It's a lot of things.
In the smart mobility one, we may do something related to technology in our signal systems. Could be a good one that fits here. But it's really the component that says integrating transportation and land use here that really got us to this kind of neighborhood level focus.
Will this is kind of maybe a little bit much, but will the connectivity analysis assess how far people have to walk to get to certain places, like the distances, how easy? Because obviously, as is evident from all the demand paths you see, people are going to take the shortest path they can find. And obviously walking takes longer and stuff, so people, the longer you make it for somebody to get somewhere, the less likely they're going to do that. So will that take into account those kinds of conditions? Like, I live in the West End, which is sort of suburban and kind of, you know, sometimes you take a circuitous route, mm-hmm. whereas Old Town is completely different. Like, will this have that kind of information available to us?
This point, I don't envision that we would. I think it would, the first step would really focus on if those connections were there.
The mobility index, though, doesn't that capture an
neither one of these really take into account sort of, to get to the convenience one, the convenience of that. You know, of that connection. It really focuses on, is that connection available? Whereas I think the convenience one might do a little bit better at, it might be there, but will I actually use it?
Two things. Yes, the city does have an inventory of streets that have and don't have sidewalks. That's in the bike and ped master plan.
Great.
It was part of that effort there. The second is, and I think this gets to kind of the question we're talking about here about the, you know, the convenience of this, because the schools make an assumption that kids can walk if they live within X distance of the school, but what they don't take into account is the route the kid has to take to get to school. And so in some instances, the kids are having to walk on streets with no sidewalks, yet, you know, they're within the boundary of not being eligible for a bus ridership. So I think this actually would lend itself greatly to helping the school system, you know, identify that they where their gaps are in terms of, you know, the ease of kids being able to safely walk, ease and safety of walking to school for kids.
Yeah, we and I forgot to mention that we talked about sort of implementation of safe routes to school projects and programs, and
right.
perhaps that could fit in here. And
yeah.
That's something that Wendy's really well versed in, so that's something that we'll probably think through a little bit more there.
It's also an EAP to have walk on. It's a midterm action by FY 2025 to implement the 2017 walk audit, recommendations for all schools. Doesn't mean doesn't lead the next step of changing something, but it's that first step, just as a highlight that.
So I think they've done all the elementary schools, and I believe there's a project next spring to do the high schools and junior high schools. So I think okay. they'll get to that one, but.
To do walk audits.
Yeah,
not for, to actually.
Yeah, yeah, right. yeah. Not to implement, but to yeah. do the audit of what mm-hmm. is still needs to be done.
But from that first round of audits, we did come up with some striping plans for quick intersection designs, like just paint and flex posts. So anticipate similar things from the next ones.
I'll just go back to maybe just from an organizational perspective, and let me come back to my question if you wanted to have any last thoughts before we...
Well, I was just going to say we had briefly off to the side talked about VMT mm-hmm. As one of those really core measures of the environmental impact of transportation choices, and it's and we discussed how it's sort of sometimes it's a trade-off. Do you do mode share, like non-SOV mode share? Do you do VMT? They're not the same thing because you can have other kinds of influences on VMT that don't move linearly with SOV mode share change. So I'm not sure that one is better than the other, but I just wanted to throw that out since it's very common. It's something that there are a lot of different sort of official ways to track. It's numbers that we can get from different sources in a routine way. Might be easier to gather and in some ways maybe more reliable. Just as a steady indicator with change over time.
And they are collecting it for the EAP, so even if it's in both places, that might actually be a way to kind of still yep. talk about it in the context of this, which probably would be yep. a little different than how we talk about it in
yeah.
the EAP.
I was in discussions with COG about how they measure that in their GHG model as well. It's a little tricky at the Alexandria level when you're it's a lot of this the work is regional.
Yep.
But it is sort of a measure that exists, but you can't always from year to year maybe make assumptions about the direction things are mm-hmm. or take a year over year change as something significant.
Organizationally, did this make sense to you that the indicators are related back to guiding principles or?
Okay. Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, it's really nice how high level these are. Yet we're not talking about outputs, we're talking about outcomes primarily, which is really nice. And so that really leads to the idea that there can be a lot of actions to try to get at one of those indicators.
Any last thoughts on this before we move on to next topics tonight? You've given us some good things to think about. But.
So can you go back one slide, I think? So your intent here is to flesh this out further. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and right now we're showing, you know, only a subset of the chapters, as we
right.
know that there's some that are going to follow on next year, so. yep, I think we'll give this some more thought, but just wanted to kind of flash it in front of you that it's a direction we can move in. I think I'm from the conversation that we've had, I gather that we kind of like this breakdown also. Okay.
Yeah, we're still working on thinking about like a mobility plan dashboard without having a billion measures that so you can get really into the weeds here. So I think we're still going to be trying to play with that balance, but I think this is the general direction we're really sticking in now.
Great. Thank you. Cool. Hand you back to Jen.
So since Aaliyah's not here, I'm not sure if she had anything specific she wanted to bring up, but she sent me the free bus fare in Kansas City article, or there was an article about how they're moving to free bus fares. And then I also highlighted here a couple of the ideas that were posted on our website or at the Innovation Forum. Cut-through improvement program that's in existence now in Fairfax and in Falls Church. Someone talked about roundabouts as being a way to keep traffic moving and also improve safety. And then the last one, Bruce told me he couldn't be here today because he was doing an event with the Transportation Commissioner for New York City. He's been working on this project for the last several years to do an electric cargo bike program for I think Amazon and DHL will have access to, or well, I don't know the details of the program, but they'll have cargo bikes and be able to park in city loading spots for free. So I just put that in there.
Yeah, UPS has been doing a similar program in Portland. Yeah.
Can you elaborate a little bit on the cut-through permit program?
I was looking into that a little bit more recently. Are you more familiar with how that works? I think restricts
so
turns.
It's, so there's some kind of controversy over the legality of it, but in certain areas in Fairfax County, they have restricted streets to residents only. Now, whether or not that's legal in terms of discrimination and everything, our city attorneys have said that would constitute discrimination, and then we wouldn't pursue that necessarily. But that's why you see, for example, turn restrictions for everyone at certain times, for example.
I remember that actually from my high school days growing up near Kings Park. There were restrictions in place there, if I remember correctly, for anybody who wasn't a resident or a school bus. That was the route that we took to get to school every day.
There
are a couple of neighborhoods in Old Town, right, where you can't cut through over between McHenry to West, where you're not allowed to cut through, I thought, if you weren't a resident during the hours.
Fayette.
There's a couple blocks on Fayette that are not, you can't go a certain direction during rush hour, essentially. But I don't know that there's a lot of evidence that's a helpful way to manage roads because you're also a network. I don't know the sort of the modeling, the math behind how you control the vehicle flow on a network and whether it really, they're going to be on one of those parallel streets, west or Route 1 backed up or Fayette. So I don't know how effective that is for actual traffic management pieces. But I recall, maybe I'm wrong about this, someone can tell me, that roundabouts have been controversial in this community in the past. I think maybe there was some hubbub about it during the bicycle and pedestrian plan update.
It was when they were discussing the the Greenway on Royal Street.
Right. And I only sort of, at that time, I was very much just a community member showing up at some meetings and then hearing conversation back and forth and not fully understanding all of it. But I think this is an example where if staff or consultants have time to talk about tools that this plan may, like to prepare information that helps educate the community on the tools that are available to us, I think the Vision Zero process did that really well because there are a lot of, what were they called in the action plan?
mitigations isn't quite the right word, but something like that, where there's specific techniques that we know are helpful, like making a street narrower makes cars slow down. So there's like some physical things that we know happen, and roundabouts are a funny tool that I think is uncommon in this community, but it's not necessarily uncommon everywhere. And I don't know what the ramifications are for accessibility. Like, I've heard that they're not great for people with vision impairments, but I don't know if that's just a few people's opinion or if that's sort of a known drawback to the tool as it is implemented in the streetscape. And so it's the kind of thing where I personally can see a lot of benefits to it if they fit in the infrastructure. Benefits to making traffic safer, because a four-way stop is easier to run at full speed than it is to run through a roundabout. But again, I just think in this particular case, we may get to a point in the plan where it's not today, but in the fullness of the plan, where having some more information about some of these techniques would be helpful for us.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I think Aaliyah asked for this segment of tonight's meeting, but I think it tees up well. I mentioned that we are working on policy, but the step that immediately follows is draft recommendations or ideas for recommendations, and we're gonna focus on those first bunch of chapters that we're working on here. So mobility options and streets are gonna be the big ones. And so within the realm of those, we could have this conversation tonight. We had Innovation Forum and Innovation Ideas tonight, or follow up via email, and start throwing some things out. And we can process those through with a little bit of filter of, does it fit? Does it work within the paradigm that we're talking about? What does the data actually show for persons with disabilities using roundabouts, et cetera? We can flesh those things in out a little bit more and come back and report out to you. We're also going to have some focus groups conversations with the community in January, and similarly hoping to get from those groups some ideas, like fundamentally what would you like to see, so that we can process those again through a similar filter and say, do those apply? Do they work within the values and priorities that you all have outlined for us? And then come back and say, okay, we looked at this subset. Here are the ones that seem to fit the best out of those. Which does the community like, or which does the community like in what context? Because the entire city is not the same. So that is this kind of cues up a little bit where we're going next in the planning process.
So go ahead.
No, look at that. I was just to piggyback on what Melissa said. I like what you're saying. Like, you want to hear it from the community, and I think that's really important. But I think what you're also saying, and I think that's a really good idea, is the other way. Like, sometimes you'll know things, or you're collecting things, you're doing that research, you're doing all that groundwork, but being able to go back and let the community know what those tools are and why they would be potentially useful, because it might be something that the community might just have that reaction to the roundabouts without actually being based on anything other than its change, or it seems weird, or they don't really understand it, but we might be able to do a better job at promoting, almost like selling, having that outreach on these tools that are available. And I think
so some high-level trade-offs. Here are the benefits, here are the drawbacks.
Yeah.
I think we can get into that somewhat in the focus group, sort of what information is important, and sort of start getting there, and then we'll have bigger meetings later in the process where we can put that back out.
So we actually have a lot of this already done in the Complete Streets Guide. It describes all of these different measures that you can take. They don't necessarily go into the detail that you talked about in terms of what are the pluses and minuses of it, but that would be a good place to start, I think, and also something that could be introduced more broadly to the community at large, because it's a fairly useful document to at least go through there and go, I understand why something like this might be used versus something else. And Wendy, was your group the ones that helped put that together?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it's a pretty good document to build from, at least.
Yeah. That focuses a lot on the physical. So
yes.
We want to think about physical. We
yes.
also want to think about recommendations that are programmatic or education or, the whole
yep.
the whole cycle.
Yeah.
I want to make a quick remark on roundabouts. I like them as long as you don't do them like DC.
Yes.
What is that? Oh, the
DuPont Circle with, like, with multiple phases and lights and
traffic lights.
It's just
Alexandria, where you put stop signs on.
Stop signs on roundabouts.
Yeah.
I think out towards Vienna, or I think it's out that direction when I've gone out that way, there's some side streets that are almost like residential that are like slightly more of a throughway than like the Fayette. It might be more like the West Street, and there's some there that I notice when I go out.
Arlington County's got some on 9th and 12th Street that really, I think, make it easy for everybody to get around. I don't know the issue, though, in terms of visually impaired people or persons with disabilities.
And I don't know. Yeah, I don't know that background.
Offhand, anything else that you want to throw out for the list or follow up with Jen as you percolates in all your copious free time over the next couple of weeks?
Well, I probably would change the word free to no charge bus service, because it's honestly not free.
True. So is that, that's up there as an idea for us to play with, like what would be the impact of eliminating bus fare on our ridership and system and so on?
Good example already exists on the trolley. I mean, it's no charge, and what would be the impact if you started charging $1 for using it?
And I think that's one area where there's a lot of literature. There's a whole discipline that people have less or more skepticism of, called willingness to pay, that tests people's and it's sensitive to the fact that some people don't have a lot of money, but even people who don't have a lot of money are sometimes willing to pay something for something that they need, and there's that balance between money that it costs to run it, the not free bus fare, the not free bus, I guess, is the thing. And providing it for free versus providing it for a little and having that money help support getting things done. So,
So recently in Montgomery County, they used to have a summertime free ride on bus fare for students, and they recently expanded that to year-round so that all students in Montgomery County Public Schools can ride the bus for free to get to different places. So I think that's a variation of that might be interesting.
We have that now.
For high school.
The circulator bus in D.C. is now being charged. You know, there's the other side of the coin.
The reason for that is that they found most of the new riders were actually just coming from Walmart routes.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So this is like, are there any other innovative things?
Anything else you've been thinking about in the last, since the innovation forum that you want to throw at the wall right now?
Well, it essentially is the same thing, but I really like the thing that Columbus, Ohio is doing in terms of reaching out to the low-income folks to help them get to their medical appointments and all. So I don't know if it necessarily has to be, as comprehensive as Kansas City's or as small as Alexandria's is with the school students and then the trolley, but kind of a variation in there of, if you're hitting the low income folks, is that a good target to really help them?
Yeah, just so folks know too, in region wide, there's a lot of discussion about say reduced fares for low income populations, or changing the fare structure around. At WMATA, the draft budget that they just put out actually would call for an elimination of the transfer penalty. So that's an example of it as well.
That's good, because we're assuming that in our transit vision.
Nice. Yes.
So I'm glad they're on board.
Well, we knew that.
But then also with that, there's looking at more uniformity across the region with fares for the local bus services as well. So.
And some of that's covered by the employer subsidy that was on the slides before, right?
Yeah.
Some of it's tax deductible. Kind of the flexible.
Employer incentives, whatever they are. Yeah.
Not up there, but I think has been discussed in the context of innovation is access to real-time information. We've got that on, is there, I'm trying to think.
Dash has it.
No, not really. All it does is it tells you that you're approaching the next station. If you're on the bus,
right.
If you're not on the bus, you can get real time. But once you're on the bus and you start moving, it becomes really hard to keep track of the real time information easily.
So there's like what we can do with our phones, and then there's like the use of displays in public places and the promotion of that, using it as a tool for businesses to attract people to stay longer at the coffee shop or whatever. So there's a bit of a, I don't know, are we using that information to the best of our abilities? Is it as accurate as it needs to be? And that, I guess, gets into our smart mobility chapter and the framework that you guys have already fleshed out a lot on. But I think it probably belongs up here because it's a bit of a mixture of how we use it and how good is it? How good is the data from the different transportation sources that we're getting?
Okay. Yeah, to kind of leverage on that, one of the things when I was in Amsterdam a number of years ago that I liked was when you were on a bus, not only could you see sort of the information about the bus you were on, but also the connecting buses. So you knew if you had to start getting anxious about missing the bus or, you know, or at least had a sense of, when you got there, how long you were going to be waiting for that bus to come,
airplane
or the train or something. So I think not only
when
on the bus
says,
you're on, but
ma'am,
yeah.
You're not going to make that connection, so we're going to rearrange that.
Yeah, and there'll be lots more opportunities to share ideas during this process, but I wanted to give you a few minutes today as we, things are fresh in your mind maybe from your winter Thanksgiving reading. So just wanted to talk about next steps. And you mentioned this a little bit already, but we are going to be wrapping up the online form and finishing our pop-ups December 10th. And then we'll be sort of taking in all that information, and we'll be starting to work on more policy development, and then putting together focus groups for January and February in that early part of the developed strategies phase.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we'll be doing focus groups and then going to other community stakeholder meetings again to get input from a range of folks during that stage. And then we do have, so we have near term, lots of meetings still scheduled for the next week, lots of pop-ups. So if you're around, if you want to go to the T.C. Williams basketball game on Friday, we'll be there. And Global Foods at Mark Center on Sunday morning. I think Sunday from 11 to 3, and then the Forest Laundromat from 4 to 8 on Sunday. So if you're around, you can pop in. I have a couple more meetings with different groups around the city. But then I'll be sort of recalibrating for January, February for the focus groups.
How many civic associations have you been to?
So far, I went to Delray earlier in the process and did the Federation, but I'm going to start hitting up more. Just wanted to give a couple minutes. Either Councilman, did you want to say anything?
About scooters in San Antonio? About scooters in San Antonio?
Councilman Aguirre and I did try out a number of scooters.
Mm-hmm.
Razor has one where you can actually sit down. It's almost like a bike. That was interesting. But if you pay attention to our next council meeting, when we talk about scooters, we'll talk a little bit more about that and some of the things they do here and there. There, one of the big conversations that we're having on council now is about on the sidewalk or off the sidewalk. In San Antonio, you can't ride on the sidewalk at all. And so that was an experience as well. So get to see that, got to experience that piece and how drivers navigate that as well.
How'd you feel?
So we did it late at night, so there weren't that many cars on the road. But, when you do have cars go by you, of course. Mm-hmm. You're like, okay. This could go well. This could go very bad.
How close to the Alamo could you get?
You could get right up to it.
Really?
Yeah. I was very surprised, actually. Because, yeah. As most of you know, some of the other jurisdictions don't allow people to get but so far. So I think as conversations happen around, we keep talking about geofencing, and it seems like everybody's trying to do what they can about geofencing and working with companies to push it forward and, you know, expand where they put it and things like that. So I think that's another conversation for our communities.
Recently, there's been an addition of motorized bicycles.
So I don't know if anybody saw the Washington Post article today about kind of what their direction is. They have a number of electric bikes as well, so I wouldn't be surprised. I've seen a couple of jump bikes here in the city.
Yeah, there's some right down at Four Mile Run.
I haven't seen them. Excuse me. I haven't seen them kind of just put down systematically like the scooters.
There actually is a station right at the by the Cherry Lago Building, 4109 Mount Vernon Avenue.
You said there's a.
It's a jump bicycle.
Oh, really?
There's 4109. But I don't think there's a station. There's just a bunch of bikes there.
Bike rack. Yeah, there's a bike rack for them right there.
No, that bike rack is the city bike rack.
The Capital Bike Share?
No. This is to the south of the Capital Bike Share, closer to the building itself.
The one that's always piled full of bikes?
Yeah, but they added a new bike rack.
Excellent.
So, you know, hopefully be able to bring a little bit of that to the conversation. We talk about it at the public hearing on the 14th.
Yeah, I mean, there are a lot of people buying e-bikes now.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's really like a big upswing, and there's a lot of evidence that it helps expand the reach of bicycles to people who can't otherwise just pedal a regular bike for as long of a distance. But they go faster on the trails than a regular bike does.
We've had
a
Perigo shop in Alexandria now for over 6 months.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Capital Bike Share had electric bikes too for a hot minute.
They did.
Yeah. And the battery had a problem, I think.
No, they're expecting to roll theirs back out early next year.
We do have a January meeting on the books for the fourth Wednesday, and there will be, I think, previewing policy or talking more about policies at that meeting. But I did want to give an opportunity after hearing the discussion if anyone in the audience wants to speak. We have a couple minutes.
So I understand that you are still in your outreach efforts. However, I am gravely concerned that so far you had 149 responses from citizens in a city that is somewhere between 150,000 and 155,000 people. I appreciate the 149 people who have responded, but they clearly do not represent. They are not statistically significant, nor could they possibly represent, and you can get into statistics, they don't represent the city's view. So I would caution how seriously you take those 149 responses at this time. Secondly, what I see missing from some of the comments construct you've done is the true usability factor. So I live right off of Duke Street. I technically have very high access to a dash bus. However, if I want to go to the Atlas District, I have to connect to Metro and get dumped off a 20-minute walk short of where I want to be in the Atlas District. So that's 100, it takes me an hour and 20 minutes to get where I want to go. I'm getting in my car because it'll take me 30 or 25. And I don't see an acknowledgement in what's going on here of the fact that Alexandria is a very small place, about 15.9 square miles, I believe. And I don't think the majority of trips start and end in Alexandria. And so again, the usability factor, if it's going to take me 45 minutes to get to my office via public transport and 30 minutes in my car, and I have the added bonus of being able to stop on my way home and do my shopping so I don't have to get back, come home and then get in my car and drive halfway back to where I work to do my shopping, I will stay in my car. And I just see no acknowledgement of the fact, particularly on the West End, that we are still and will remain for the foreseeable future, because you're not adding metro stations on the West End, we will remain a car-based environment by and large. And all of this focus on pedestrian and bicycle is great, but it doesn't acknowledge the reality of how we live our lives west of Waverly and where we need to go. I don't keep all of my socializing and commercial activity within the boundaries of Alexandria. I go other places.
Anyone else? Okay. Well, thank you all for coming. Everyone sign the sign-in sheet.
Are you sure you still don't want to go?
Positive.
You can join date night if you want.
For a beer, maybe I will.
Actually, I think that'd be fine.
Yeah.
I'll plan that. I'll let you know. We'll bring us in a set of mail. We'll spend it. I don't mind. It'd be fun.
And that's a, the other's for you. That's a buff from the Cranksgiving ride.
Oh,
that was so much fun.
I'm sorry. I said
oh, that. My God. I cannot tell you how much fun that was.
That's cool. I heard Josephine was probably involved, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Getting here from people I've gotten sorry. I was
a bad thing because you're
allowed
to have
it. I think it sounds like a cool idea. Is that an interesting
concept?
I think it was the first time. Yeah.
Yeah, because I don't remember that from 2 years ago.
We rode all over. We picked up. You had to do different things at each of the stops to get the socks or the hats or, you know, whatever it was. We got a gift card to Target, and then we got to use our own money to supplement the that. And so we ended up coming in second. My team came in second. And we rode from Clarendon down to Crystal City to Delray to Potomac Yard, then out to we started at 10, we finished a little bit after 1, but we had to be there early, and then we stayed and drank till like 3 or 4. So yeah, it was pretty much all day.
Feel like now behind you,
yeah.